Hello and welcome to La Pausa Pod, where myself and Jamie are back with another special edition Real Madrid comeback win in the Champions League. Although when it keeps happening, it just doesn't feel all that special anymore, although this one did, I guess. Real Madrid came back after going down a goal from Alphonso Davies against Bayern to win 2-1 with two goals from José Lu, and they're now into the Champions League final in Wembley, where they will play Borussia Dortmund. Jamie, how is your existential crisis hitting you this morning?
Yeah, I feel like I've seen that game 20 times already. I know I haven't, but it just feels that way. I'm just kind of giving up on the concept of deserving results in the Champions League these days, because I'm not saying Real Madrid weren't good. They were definitely the better team, but again, just the way it ended and the factors that it needed for that result to come to pass, with Neuer making the mistake, the phantom goal that Bayern scored, which didn't get given. It's just, yeah, crazy. I guess I just want to look at it within the scope of Real Madrid's season overall, and I don't think it's undeserved in any way that they're in a Champions League final.
I think this existential crisis isn't hitting as hard for me, because I do think that they deserve that. And I think that while the comeback from going a goal down so late in the game was just incredible, and how they did it, and the pressure that they started to put Bayern on, and just the inevitability of it, overall they were the completely better side, as far as I could see anyway, and the stats would back that up. Although we'll talk a little bit about XG and the stats and stuff like that, because I used the case for XG against Luis Enrique the night before, and in this case, Real Madrid were the better team, higher XG, and deserved to win. So we'll talk about that now in a minute. But yeah, so Real Madrid, they have gone behind 7 times in the Champions League this season, yet they only trailed for around 13 minutes on average. And when they were behind, they scored 7 and didn't concede 1. And speaking about this in hindsight, it's easy to say, I guess, and we weren't on the touchline making these big decisions, so it's easy for us to say, but this was probably where Tuchel, I felt, fell down, because once they got that goal, he was just trying to shut it down, which is understandable, but he took off Kane, and obviously Musiala was injured, so he had to go, but he gave himself no chance. Once that goal went in for Real Madrid, the first one, I don't think Bayern had any chance of surviving the end of the game. They had no chance of surviving extra time without Kane on the field. Because while we posted earlier on La Pausa Pod about Kane only having 4 completed passes, I don't think that was because of how poorly he played. I just think it was how Bayern set up. But without him on the field, I think that they reduced their chances greatly of making anything of that game if and inevitable when Real Madrid did score.
Yeah, I thought exactly the same in the moment, seeing him go off. I have seen some mention this morning that he was carrying an injury, Kane. I think quite a few of their attacking players were banged up, so I guess that's a factor. But yeah, when you go to the Bernabeu, I almost feel like you have to get the second goal to feel any sort of security, because they've not been behind by more than one all season in the Champions League. Those stats you just mentioned there, behind for 90 minutes, and the scoreline in that time is 7-0. So as soon as you score, you're waking Real Madrid up. And I almost feel like it's the best course of action is to try and get another on the break. And we've seen it well published, and those who watch the game will know they were very sloppy with those final passes by. And when their analysts watch this game back, they're going to see so many instances where they were a pass away from getting past that last line. So it's going to sting. But I think the Bernabeu and Real Madrid does that to you. It's just hard to keep your composure, and it's hard to really go and attack the game. It felt like in those moments where Musiala did it quite well times in the second half, but Sané, Kane, as you said, with the complete lack of passes, they just couldn't connect those front four players well enough. I know they got it with the goal for Davies, but again, that's a pass you expect Kane to make, just to pop it into space and let Davies try something. So, yeah, just a little bit of understandable fear from Bayern, I thought.
Yeah, and I'm taking those things into account, the injuries, the tiredness in the legs, understandable. But the disjointedness in attack was definitely evident as well, and the inability for them to link up. Like Harry Kane didn't have one single pass to Leroy Sané. There was no continuity or rhythm in their attack, and that was before they got tired. I think if we rewind all the way back to the first leg, that goal, the penalty at the end to make it 2-2, completely complicated Bayern's game plan, because in one way, you're going into the game at 2-2, it's a draw, but you're playing at the Bernabeu against Real Madrid in the Champions League, and they're going to score, okay? And obviously it didn't look like for some time last night like they were going to score, but they're going to score, and Bayern then have to decide what they're going to do. Are they going to force the issue? Are they going to sit back and wait for it to happen? And in the end, they kind of got caught between the two. And I think this is what happened to them last night. And you mentioned there as well that this is what the Bernabeu does to you. There was an anxiety running through the Bayern team. Kimmich, I thought, looked like a child at times. He was kind of lost out there. And I understand that Vinicius is in the form of his life and that. But Kimmich looked like he was rattled. And it did the same for a number of the players. I thought Neuer had a couple of kind of funny moments, decisions. Eric Dier the same. And so the goal, the penalty from the first leg, completely confused and complicated how Bayern were going to approach this match. Did you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think it would have enhanced the way that they were more able to sit back and play on the counter. I think it would have heightened the motivation a bit more to commit to that game plan, whereas, like you said, you're kind of in between how much do we want to play at the Bernabeu, because I felt first half especially that there were so many times where watching the game you could see a passing lane open up through midfield, and in a league game those players would have had no problems whipping that through, but they were so cautious. It was very side to side and taking as few risks as possible when they were in possession. So, yeah, it's tricky. I can understand the way Bayern approached the game, to be honest. I don't really want to criticize them too much for not showing enough ambition or anything like that. It's just the Bernabeu is just absolutely terrifying. you feel like you're in a game. Even looking at the scoreline, I remember there was one point where was it Pavlovic who went down with cramp? Somebody went down, and there were only a few minutes left before added time, and I was thinking, wow, Real Madrid's run is over. And then all of a sudden it's 2-1. Joselu comes on and scores twice. So again, it's just one of those atmospheres where you never feel safe in the game. I guess we can criticise Tuchel now for trying to lock down, but if he'd have kept it far at the back, would they have conceded anyway? You know, it's just so difficult to say.
Yeah, it is obviously impossible to say. We don't have the counterfactual, so we're just speculating. But bringing on, trying to catch them on the break and thinking, okay, if we sit here, just sit and soak it up, and we might catch, bringing on Muller, and then Motting, I don't think is the solution. But having said that, I don't watch Bayern enough, and I don't know who they have on their bench that they could bring on. And yeah, the Real Madrid do that to you. And just on the point about XG that I was mentioning earlier, so they finished with 2.9 XG from 19 shots, 34 touches in the opposition box, and 5 big chances. And I think that they were much deserved winners here on the night. But that's without it being really inevitable for the first hour. There was, I think Vinicius had the better of Kimmich on Real Madrid's left hand side. And I think that Rodrigo's movement, Bellingham's movement, and this has been a feature of their game now for a couple of weeks, and that confused Bayern and led to a lot of overloads on the left-hand side, which allowed then Kroos to swing it out to the right, and Valverde and Carvajal were able to get the better then of on the right-hand side. So they deserved it. But then my argument against PSG on Tuesday night when they went out to Borussia Dortmund was they finished with 3.2 XG from 30 shots, 50 touches in the opposition box and 5 big chances. And I suppose my point here is just how you interpret XG, how you interpret dominance and how you view the game, because 3.2 XG without scoring seems like a lot, but it was from 30 shots, and it was just, it never felt, watching the Tuesday night game, like PSG had Borussia Dortmund in a really compromised position. Whereas there was times against Bayern, Real Madrid did, and it was just that feeling where there's more danger here in Real Madrid. They're way more likely to get a goal, as opposed to when Luis Enrique mentioned the 3.2 XG and all that. It's just a matter of how you accumulate it.
Yeah, PSG obviously struggled to make inroads in that match as well. So I think we can probably discuss Vinicius now specifically, because he was the guy who generated so many of those openings second half, and I think he was the one as well who kept the atmosphere alive in the stadium. There was probably a risk that second half where Bayern go one up, of it kind of not petering out, because it would never happen at the Bernabeu, but he kept the belief alive with the drive that he had in the match, and it felt like he was the only attacking player who really played with real aggression and belief that he was going to make something happen. Yeah, just he didn't score assists on the night, even though he's had an incredible run of scoring and assisting in Champions League these last couple of years. But again, he was the catalyst for the game, it felt like. And as you said, Kimmich just got destroyed that second half, didn't he? Even doubling up two or three, Vinicius just happily looks at them, and he'll just drive into the wall of defenders and still put them on the heels and try to make something happen. So he's just so unique at this level and in these type of games.
Yeah, it's hard to know where to start with Vinicius, because there's so much to discuss. Like, Kimmich has dribbled by five times last night, and he, even when Vinicius didn't manage to dribble by him, he was able to get really low, dangerous crosses into the box, and that was more likely where they were going to find the goal. He sent one flying into Rodrigo. He got a touch on it, and that was nearly a goal. A couple of those, and they had that left hand side. That's been Ancelotti showed us this new kind of tactic in the Manchester United first leg, where he played Rodrigo and Vinicius on the left-hand side and kind of confused everyone and confused City. And they obviously implemented that now with Rodrigo having a freer role to move across. And they were able to pin Bayern in on that left-hand side completely. And it then you had Kroos, like I said, who was able to swing it in. We'll talk about Kroos now in a minute. But so Vinicius is... for my money, I've watched Mbappe now a few times in the last couple of weeks, and Bellingham's level just dropping a little bit. I think Vinicius is probably the best player in the world, and I wonder about the Mbappe arrival, which isn't official yet, but we're assuming it's going to be official. How is this going to work? Because Vinicius, aside from the tactical side and where they play, like literally the practical stuff, Vinicius surely has to feel a little bit like, I'm the best left winger in the world. Like, why do you need to bring someone else in here?
Yeah, it's been a funny week seeing Mbappe and Vinicius' performances. But not just this week. You know, across the last three seasons, Vinicius has been the most decisive player in the knockout series in the Champions League. If you're looking at total goals and assists, he's got 17. In those games over the last three seasons. So yeah, he's got all the right in the world to probably think he is, you know, at worst probably third best player on the planet at the moment. I would agree as of today he is the best, because there was just a distinct difference in terms of determination I felt watching Mbappe and Vinicius these last few nights. Vinicius just you know, keeps the pedal to the ground all game in these game on these nights, and he just doesn't let the opposition off. Whereas Mbappe was just kind of drifting in and out, not too involved. I feel like there's a different mentality there where Vinicius is just so intense and always trying to put the defenders he's playing against on the back foot. So, yeah, I guess figuring out how they're going to coexist in the team is a pretty broad subject. But for now, I'll just say I am interested to see how the balance is affected in the team, because to me, when I think back on the season, whether they win the Champions League or not, the balance of the team has been the biggest thing for me. The collective, the way they've put the pieces together, the way they've been so good balancing defense and attack, and they've never felt, attack heavy or defense heavy. Feels like they can take the game anywhere. So, yeah, Mbappe is something we're going to talk about many times, I assume, before he plays his first game for Real Madrid. But yeah, how do you view it from here?
Yeah, well, before we move on to Mbappe and how that fits in, or we'll discuss that now, and just the overall squad in general and how they've managed to achieve what they've achieved, cruising to La Liga and now another Champions League final where they will be red-hot favourites, needless to say. So the point about Vinicius and Mbappe, when you watch the two of them, I think there's a distinct difference between the two in that Mbappe in open space is unstoppable almost. He's so fast, and he when he gets in behind, he's probably more composed and a better finisher in that sense than Vinicius. The problem is, like we saw on Tuesday night with Mbappe against Dortmund, when he's in the box and there's men in front of him, it feels like he's not, there's nothing happening here, he's not going to be able to figure that out here. Whereas with Vinicius, he's so unpredictable, and that kind of fast twitch, those fast twitch movements he has, he's liable to kind of maybe bring it down the byline and sneak inside, and it feels like even when there is a team sitting really deep against him, Vinicius can still make something happen. And that's what we saw again last night. Like, even when they did have two people on him, it was like he's going to kind of wriggle his way through the two of them, or he's going to maybe win a free, whereas Mbappe just doesn't have that burst in short spaces to go by a player, I think. And that's that's what I noticed in just watching him the last couple of weeks. But yeah, onto the Real Madrid squad as a whole then. Ancelotti said he never expected they could achieve what they have this season, and I think on that balance, the stability within the squad, like, we do often talk about the best players in the world, Vinicius, Bellingham. And there was that saying years ago, Zidane's and Pavones, where the team was going to be made up of Zidane's, who were Galacticos, and Pavones, who were kind of squad players coming up from the academy, and that they were going to find a blend with that. I think we've got a new version of that now, which is like, I call it the Vinnies and the Valverdes. And while you look at players like, obviously Vinicius, Bellingham, like I said, and then you look what's behind them, and players who haven't had their best seasons, the likes of Valverde, they've been really, really good, but not individually good, if that makes sense, in terms of their overall numbers, contribution, just really, really solid and providing the backbone and the platform for Bellingham, for Vinicius, and for Rodrigo to go and shine. So you've got your Valverde, Tchouaméni, he's not even really spoken about now, but he's just filled in wherever he's needed to fill in. Rudiger, Carvajal, who, again, last night, didn't really get forward as often as, and didn't cause as much of a threat going forward as he quite often does, but just so solid there right back. And I think that when we talk about that defensive stability and the reason why they've been so consistent, it's because of that. And even on nights when things aren't going their way, Vinicius can provide a spark and just turn the game on its head, really. And while it was costly in the end last night, Vinicius was the reason why Bayern were anxious to begin with and why he had them on their toes. So I think that's probably what we're talking about here. Is that something that is sustainable? And do you think that those players who are providing that backbone can keep doing that on to next season and they can go on and build on this yet again?
I think so, because the outer edges of the squad this season have been so good. We're speaking after Hosselu has just come on and scored twice in a Champions League semi-final. But guys like Hosselu, Brahim, Lucas Vazquez, even Modric at this stage of his career, like everybody is so hungry when they come on the pitch. Everybody is, it's like they don't want to be seen to be lesser than the starters. They all want to contribute when they come on. Even watching them against Cadiz in their last league game, 2-0 up in added time with the League One, and I counted three slide tackles that went in from various players, and I'm thinking this is just a different Real Madrid to what I've seen in the last, I don't know, across at least the last 5-6 years. Like, obviously they've had very successful teams, but I think the general hunger across the team and how well those squad players contribute has been a massive factor in it. And yeah, you mentioned the example of Fede Valverde. If you look at his stats, you're going to see that he's not contributed much in terms of goals and assists this season, but it's completely not the point. He's been incredible as the guy who is one of the most visible balancing acts in the team. Even last night, I thought to start the game, he was back doing that role where he kind of fills in for Carvajal. They push Carvajal on out wide, and Valverde is just being that vigilant version of himself, where he's got his eye out ready for counters. Just little things like that, I think, have gone a very long way to building a really complete Real Madrid team.
Absolutely, yeah, and even players like Ferland Mendy, who there was question marks over at left back. That's why they brought in Fran Garcia this season, and he's been lights out as well. Holding it down as a left back for Vinicius to then go and shine, when I was talking about the backbone, we're forgetting here that Militao has to come back, and so does Alaba. And so does Courtois. So the competition for places is going to grow even more intense. And you think back to that season under Zidane, where James Rodriguez, Alvaro Morata, they had like that B team. Ceballos, I think, was part of that. And there was no drop off. So even on games where, you know, where say for example that Cadiz game, and you're thinking, okay, Real Madrid might be a little bit vulnerable here. Someone's going to have to play that hasn't played at all this season, and the level just drops off and it's inexplicable. Real Madrid lose 1-0 and it's because they had to play the players who they hadn't played. Whereas this season you're getting the likes of Modric, and he's kind of rebelling against the dying of the light or something, where he kind of feels like he's trying to prove that I have more left in me. And I think a player who typifies that, and it's really interesting to watch him when he's playing, and it's incredible that he's only 20. But Jude Bellingham, aside from him and his statistics and his overall production and contribution in terms of goals and assists, his body language and his ability to understand what the crowd wants and what the crowd needs and how to act as a Real Madrid player has just been incredible. And I know that like they're so surprised with how mature he is for a 20 year old. And there was a couple where he chased down last night, and it was, I think it was when they were 1-0 down, and he blocked a clearance from De Ligt, and he kind of got the crowd going again. And I think that he is one of the players who typifies that never letting up. And like, I know we always say it and it's always said, but a player who was born to play for Real Madrid, I think Bellingham was. And I think aside from being born to play for Real Madrid, I think he knows that he was born to play for Real Madrid. So yeah, I think that's the it's it's scary to think how good they could be if they bring in Mbappe. So anyway, moving on then to, we've talked about how this is going to continue on, but the chances are, or there's a decent chance that it doesn't continue like this, because one player who they're heavily reliant on this season and who has been just incredible as well, he's back in the Germany team for the Euros after retiring previously, just too good, he just has to be called back, is Toni Kroos. And while there doesn't seem to be any drop-off in his performance yet, it has to come. Now, it might not come for another 2 years. It might not come for another 3 years. It might come at the start of next season. But he is the kind of player who is irreplaceable right now for Real Madrid. He completed the most passes, 173, the most long passes, 24, and he created the most chances, 7, of any player across the 4 teams in the semi-finals. While we talk about the strength and depth, if you lose a Kroos, or if Kroos' level drops, the whole thing could fall apart quite easily too, though, no?
Yeah, just watching him last night, he's an absolute one-of-one midfielder. The way that everybody else looked so tense in how they wanted to move the ball around, and Kroos just drops in like it's five-a-side, and he's just in that pocket where some teams try and press him and he kind of wriggles out, and some teams just let him play because they're worried about leaving space behind. So it's kind of like pick your poison. I mean, it was just funny last night how many times in that first half he just switched the ball, right on the spot. And yeah, he's a one of one player. Like you said, that there's no Toni Kroos replacement when he finally calls it a day. You can sign all these incredible attackers. You know, you bring in Mbappe when you've already got huge riches in attack, but a guy who has spent so many years playing in the Bernabeu in these big games of a controlling nature, that's gone once Kroos goes. So yeah, I don't know when it'll be. Maybe he'll retire at the end of this season. Maybe it'll be in 2 years' time. I don't know. But when that moment comes, that's going to be probably, I don't want to say the biggest challenge, but a very interesting challenge for a club who have planned their, you know, successions so well in recent times, and they've got almost all of their signings spot on. So yeah, very intrigued to see when that time comes.
Yeah, that's worth taking a look at some point, is their transfer strategy and how it's kind of changed over the years. Used to be, I remember someone told a story once about how, I think it was Jorge Valdano, he came to Florentino Perez and he told him about this young guy, Kaká, who was going to be worth 60 million one day. And Florentino Perez told him, we'll buy him for 60 million then when he's worth that much. And it was like, as if to say, let someone else develop him. We'll splash the cash when he's ready and when he's proven he's good enough. Whereas they completely switched it, and they're still spending big money on Brazilian talent, Vinicius, Rodrigo. But it's hard to imagine, but relative to what the other, you would have to spend for Vinicius if you were buying him now. So I think it's hard to imagine how it couldn't have panned out any better with Vinicius. There was a couple of kind of murky moments there earlier on in his career when it looked like his finishing wasn't there. It looked like he was too up and down and might not ever break in. But he's just, like we were saying there, one of the best players in the world. Rodrigo as well, another player who's kind of overshadowed in all of this, but still so important and starting on the biggest nights for Real Madrid and contributing throughout the season. Just back to Bellingham then, we watched him last night and we've seen him now over the last couple of weeks, and there's been talk about him, his level dropping and his the numbers just aren't there like they were at the start of the season. He played as defensively, he played as the left midfielder last night, and there was times when it felt like he would have been better served on the ball if he was allowed to playing in a bit of a freer role, but it felt like he was trying to keep high up the field. Do you think that role is something that he's going to be okay with for the long term, playing on the left of a midfield. And in attack, do you think there's a case to be made for him dropping maybe a little bit deeper into midfield and picking up the ball, influencing the game from there, when he's not producing like he was at the start of the season?
I thought last night, I don't know for sure, but him playing on the left was probably done a lot, thinking Kimmich is going to be a factor going forward from right back in the first half. Especially you saw him moving into midfield zones as well from right back a lot more than Mazraoui was doing. So, yeah, I thought it was probably more a defensive measure. You remember early in the season when he first moved Bellingham onto the left side was when they were suffering from crosses. When they got beat away at Atletico for the first time in that season, he shifted onto the left side. I remember him playing there at Girona away as well. So to me, I might be wrong with that. That looked like a defensive measure to me. But long term, what happens with Bellingham will have a lot to do with what happens with Mbappe, I think. And I would imagine, unless Rodrigo is going to stay in the team, which I worry for his minutes next season if Mbappe arrives, I think you will see Bellingham playing more box to box. I mean, it's the thing with Bellingham is it's hard to really put a position on him, because we've heard him speak so many times saying Ancelotti gives me complete freedom on the pitch. I can come and join in the build up if I want, as long as I'm kind of getting in the box enough during a game, it's fine. So, but yeah, Bellingham's position is, I don't think Ancelotti will be overly concerned about finding the solution there next season when Mbappe arrives. But yeah, again, I think Bellingham will mould perfectly to almost anything Ancelotti will ask of him.
Yeah, which speaks to his versatility, but also to his willingness to do that work. Like, I mean, he is the biggest name, aside from maybe Vinicius, obviously, but he's willing to just do that as a defensive measure because he just wants to win. And I think that's what I was saying earlier about his just getting it completely. Just to finish off here on this episode of the La Pausa Pod, I want to throw a little quiz at you. Not a quiz, it's like I want to just see what you think here. A situation, I don't know, what's the name for it? A hypothetical situation. What would you do, Jamie Kemp, as the sporting director of Real Madrid? A, do you, instead of signing Mbappe, do you sign a striker for cheap? Because to me, it feels like they're signing Mbappe because they can, not because they need him or because they feel like this is the final piece of a jigsaw puzzle. I think there's almost a sense of signing him just because when you, and it's understandable, when you can get Kylian Mbappe for free, you sign him and that's it. But would you, as the sporting director now recently appointed at Real Madrid, would you save that money and sign a striker?
I think you have to accept the maybe some initial short-term problems with signing Mbappe, but I think over the long term, it's something you just have to do. Like you said, he is the best player in the world. Maybe not this week, but I think I would pick him. If I was starting a team tomorrow and I could pick one player, I would pick Mbappe. But yeah, it's just, to me, I think from Ancelotti's perspective, he's probably been so happy this season with just a complete collective feel to the team, the way that everybody is contributing, everybody competes. There's almost no passengers on the pitch. And to now have to integrate Mbappe, I'm sure there's going to be a little part of him thinking, my job just got a little bit harder, as strange as that sounds, by signing one of the best players in the world. But again, Ancelotti is the master of finding balance, putting pieces in, you know, in the right spots. But yeah, I think it's just as simple as some people are listening to this thinking, what are these guys talking about, questioning signing of Mbappe? But yeah, I think it's one of those that you have to sign him 100 times out of 100, but I don't think it's going to be complete problem-free and they're just going to win the next five titles by scoring 130 goals a season. But anyway, are you signing a striker or...
No, I do agree with you. And I mean, at the end of the day, you do sign Mbappe when you get the chance. But I would be worried how Ancelotti said that they have an incredible mentality. They're very humble and really generous. I think it's the best squad I've had in my career. And I think that it's not only the best squad, but it's the most balanced. And I would just worry that this is going to throw that balance off. And that might have... What I mean there is it could be dressing room stuff, like as in how does he settle in? How do they feel about this Galactico? How does Mbappe deal with going there when he's got Bellingham and Vinicius already there as two superstars fighting for the title of, not explicitly fighting for the title, but they are fighting for the Ballon d'Or and Mbappe is going to jump in and be like, here, I'm here too. I want to take all the penalties and I want to score all these goals. So I just be worried about the balance being thrown off. But I do also think that next season, when we're talking about Kroos, maybe if his level drops or if Carvajal's level drops, there are obviously in any squad, there are things that could happen that you have to see coming down the line and that they have to prepare for. But the not having a number nine that you can rely on, that you can start, and I'm not saying that Joselu isn't that guy, but I think you might be better served, and it would give you another weapon in your arsenal to be able to play with a nine and then have Bellingham play as a box-to-box instead of kind of having to fill that role and then Vinicius filling that role. But that's not to say that they won't, and I haven't seen Endrick enough to see. I don't know if he's like a nine, if he can play as a nine. So that's what is he?
Yeah, no, I completely forgot about Endrick. Yeah, it's just too many players.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, too many good players. The biggest problem.
Add a Goulaire, yeah. Maybe.
Goulaire, yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know. They might even sign Victor Roque. Who knows? But and guys, anyone listening, I'm sorry if this is a very speculative episode of the podcast, but it's Real Madrid in the Champions League. We don't know how to analyze it other than just saying what's going on, and we're trying to kind of figure out just how they do it. And it leads to some absolutely wild speculation. I've just appointed Jamie as the sporting director of Real Madrid. I don't know how my head's gone here. But I think we'll leave it there for this episode of La Posta Pod. So we'll catch you next week. But from us here, it is adios.